AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Markets were closed today, and we're getting ready to start a new week later this afternoon. What will traders be watching, and what's the momentum in the market as traders get ready? We've got it all covered for you right now.
From Martin Luther King Jr. Afternoon Day via Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we talk with Steve Nicholson from Rabo AgriFinance. In the final segment, Kerry Artek from ArtekAdvisory.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, man, thank you so much. Appreciate that. We are going big picture. Big picture
big
on
picture.
The show today. Mm-hmm. In the conversation with Steve Nicholson from Rabo. Always fun to have a
El
conversation with Steve.
Fotografio Largo, I believe,
yes.
In French. Fotografio Largo today.
Is that it?
Well, I didn't take French in high school. I had to pick
here all of a sudden.
I had to pick it up on my own, but I'm pretty sure that's right. Self-taught.
Outstanding.
Self-taught.
Self-taught in French. Yeah.
That's right. Oui.
Excellent. Excellent. Hey, I hope everyone has figured out a way to celebrate the man today, Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So important to celebrate those that have had so much impact on the history of this country.
Yes.
And Martin Luther King Jr. is definitely one of those guys that we need to celebrate. So glad that the markets are closed. Glad that the government was closed,
yeah,
so that we get a chance to do that.
Yeah, and one of the things you can do if you're like, well, how would I even do that? There's a pretty simple. Get on your Google machine and look up some of his writings.
Yeah.
He's got
yeah.
lots of stuff that's published. Read what he wrote. Read his
right.
speeches. Watch the Eye of a Dream speech on YouTube. That's a place
yep.
to start. That's
fantastic.
A place to start.
Fantastic. Fantastic mm-hmm. idea right there. Yeah. And listen to his messages of peace and understanding.
Yeah.
And think about those messages when you look at the news tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And just think how would his message be received today if he was still here to give it, Davis? I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. we've got the left has no trust of the right. The right has no trust of the left. And the trust of the American people of what's going on inside of Washington, D.C., it may be as low as I've ever seen it.
Yep.
But I wonder
yep.
if somebody like Martin Luther King Jr. stepped forward with such a positive message.
Mm-hmm.
Of peace and understanding. I wonder how well it would be received right now, or if the old cancel culture would kick in
yeah.
and drive the guy away. Yeah.
Either
yeah.
that, or he'd be president of the United States. I got to tell you.
Yep.
Dude had solutions. He had ideas.
He ideas
that we
did.
Need.
He yep. certainly did. Good stuff, Davis. Good stuff, man. All right. Hey,
yeah.
Let's get ready for the open. That is coming up here later this afternoon as traders get this thing started off. Let's go ahead and take a look at the news that was in the markets at the end of the week.
Well, looking backward, wheat trade was volatile at the end of last week as markets tried to digest news that Russia will take steps to restrict exports. At the high of Friday's session, March SRW futures were within a dime of $7, which calculated into some big-time profits for professional trading funds on the long side of the market. Some profit-taking to end an eventful week pulled wheat prices well off session highs to wrap up Friday's trade. On Friday's close, March hard red winter wheat 6.5 cents higher, 643. March soft red gained 5.5 cents to close at 675.5. March spring wheat 2.75 higher, 643.25, Chip.
Yeah, wheat had been underperforming. Davis, had been underperforming the rally that we saw in the corn market, underperforming the rally that we've seen in soybeans. And there's the conversation that we had with Brian Doherty from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. That we had Brian on Friday's afternoon show. We were talking about how the wheat market hasn't done enough yet to encourage some iffy stands or some iffy conditions for producers to go ahead and take that crop through to harvest. In other words, if it looks a little iffy this spring, we still might go in and tear it up because there's a better opportunity to grow a corn crop, a bean crop, a sorghum crop, a cotton crop, something like that. So it's something that we're going to have to watch pretty closely here with this market. Wheat's going to have to at least start to perform at a level similar to corn and soybeans, or we're going to lose acres.
March corn futures on Friday stopped a quarter of a penny short of a full test of resistance at Thursday's high, but buyers were more active on the test of support near 5:30. The resulting inside day with a low range close on the daily chart for March corn points to a period of consolidative trade near contract highs. USDA Friday announced Mexico bought some U.S. corn, but traders generally agree the January 12 updates to the supply and demand tables drove home the need to slow the usage pace of corn in the 2020 and 21 marketing year. At the end of last week, March corn futures 2¾ lower, 5.31½. May corn off 3 cents, 5.34¾. July corn closed at 5.32. That's down 2¾ cents, Chip.
Yeah, I like the way that the market traded at the end of the week. A little bit of a setback, a little bit of profit taking. The bear spreads worked, which was also some position evening. We touched a bit of the reset button, I think.
Soybean traders know the market's primary responsibility right now is to slow down the usage pace. But USDA on Friday announced the sale of 318,000 metric tons of soybeans sold to an unknown destination. The sale failed to push bean prices upward, but most agreed recent rains in Argentina likely erased some of that buying interest. Weather in South America will undoubtedly be the focus of the market in the week ahead as traders still try to figure out just how much demand rationing is needed. March bean futures on Friday could not push through resistance at Wednesday's high of 14.36½ in each of the last two sessions that triggered a round of profit-taking to end the week. On Friday's close, March bean futures 13¾ lower, 14.16¾. May beans fell 13 cents to 14.14¾. July bean futures closed at 14.01. That's down 12¼, Chip.
No doubt that weather in South America is going to be the primary focus this week. It's going to turn a little drier in Argentina. That's what the forecast is, but Brazil looks pretty good.
Cotton futures traded higher last week, but tightening old crop supplies failed to sustain upside momentum in the market. On Friday, March cotton was 45 points lower at 80.70. July cotton dropped 38 points to 82.37. Livestocks. Fat cattle futures this week will be watching the boxed beef market for direction, while trade in feeder cattle will be driven by the corn market. At the end of last week, February live cattle were 70 cents higher, 112.77½. April cattle jumped 97½ cents to 118.20. March feeder cattle, 245 higher, 135.82½. And finally, on the snout side, watch pork product trade and the weekly export sales report for price direction in the lean hog market this week. Heading into the market's three-day weekend, February lean hogs were $1.62½ higher, $67.92½, and April hogs firmed 57½ to $72.65. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Davis, have you seen a market like this feeder cattle that has been so responsive to what happens in another market like what's happening with corn and feeders right now?
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable to see how closely those markets are tied right now, which makes a lot of sense, but sometimes futures trade doesn't make a lot of sense, and it does right now. Great. Good stuff. Hey, we got Steve Nicholson coming up from Rabo AgriFinance right here on AgriTalk. The 2020 harvest is long over, but managing resistant weeds remains key as we move into 2021. Steve Gumm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here today. Steve, how does a lack of weed seed bank management impact a grower's potential yield?
So essentially, deposits are made to the bank from the reserve of weed seeds developed from unmanaged infestations or weed escapes. And once those deposits are made into the ground, seeds can grow and mature into more weeds, creating a cycle that can be really hard to stop. As this happens, fields are at a higher risk for resistance to develop, and herbicide applications become less effective year over year.
Yeah, so you mentioned to me that you have four key ways that growers can keep their weed seed bank accounts low. What are those?
Sure thing. There are four key actions that we always talk about to help growers minimize risks of the weed seed bank building in their fields. These include using full labeled rates of herbicides that optimize coverage and control, apply herbicides before the largest weed in the field reaches 4 inches in height, scout fields for problem areas and identify those weeds. Clean equipment between fields is really important, especially at harvest, to prevent seeds from spreading. It's also important to keep in mind that new herbicide technology should not be treated as a silver bullet for resistant weed management. Instead, new herbicides should be used as an additional tool in an integrated, comprehensive weed management program.
Wow, that is excellent perspective right there. Steve, what's your recommended herbicide that offers the best comprehensive program in corn?
In corn, Acuron herbicide will help fields start clean and protect them from weeds prior to emergence, so you can control weeds now and in the future as a premium resistance management solution. With four active ingredients and three effective sites of action, Acuron is the best herbicide solution for control of resistant weed biotypes with built-in weed resistance management. Remember, Acuron also provides growers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre when applied pre-emergence at a full label rate, in addition to helping prevent increasing that weed seed bank.
Got to keep that weed seed bank low. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. The markets are closed today. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We are celebrating that. And even though the markets are closed, we still need to talk about what is going on in these things because, my goodness gracious, how things have changed over the past 4 or 5 months. And I don't know anybody better to have a conversation, a big picture conversation about what is going on in the grain markets than Steve Nicholson. He is with Rabo Agri Finance, grain and oilseed analyst there. Steve, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me back. It's good to talk to you, Chip. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
It is. You're absolutely right. If we'd had this chat 6 months ago, 5 months ago, even 4 months ago, it'd been a whole different flavor.
Right. But, Steve, one of the things that made this current situation happened almost a year ago when President Trump announced the signing or agreement, phase one agreement of the trade talks with China. We talk about some of the supply side issues that we are dealing with and the uncertainty of the numbers coming out of NAS right now, but none of this matters without the demand.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you're right. It's almost a year ago to the day that the phase one was signed and we got a chance to read it. And this is, you know, you're right. This has been supply led, but also demand led.
Yep.
And the demand led is what's really got us in this almost straight up market. And China has certainly been a big part of that story. If it hadn't been, they needed stuff. That's about the best way I can put it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter what you want to name is they need it. They obviously need soybeans. And the big change, I think, is likely the corn situation with ASF, diminishing. I'm going to put it diminishing. It's not gone away, and we have to remember that. But the fact is it has changed the way they think about their hog production and the fact that they need the corn for that hog sitter kind of Western-style production models.
Right.
It has just exploded.
Right. And that's got to be the number one thing that is driving the Chinese demand for corn, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Is all about hogs. And you look at the numbers and you look at what's happening there, they're making good progress, coming out of the abyss of AFS. And so, and when we look at the Chinese demand for corn, and that's the thing that keeps me optimistic, I'm optimistic about these markets over the next 2 or 3 years. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to have some violent corrections and some volatility market, because you know as well as I do with markets that are going straight up that it's like rocket fuel. You know, eventually it runs out and it's got to, we've got to have a bit of a correction. But I think the Chinese demand, setting policy issues and politics aside, is the demand for corn, the demand for soybeans, the demand for meal, the demand for wheat is going to be there, and they need it. And each of those commodities has a different set of fundamentals and different set of factors are driving that. But when you get to the end of the day, it's all about the fact they need demand, or they need product, and we've got it. And I think that's going to be very supportive to markets over the next 2 to 3 years for all of us, really.
Yeah, Steve, I hear what you're doing. You are stressing need in this conversation. It's not a want.
Yeah.
Oh, they want to refill their state-owned reserves. I get that.
Absolutely.
But they need the product immediately to feed that growing hog herd.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And you talked about the need, and it's not a want. That's exactly right. And there's a lot of things driving that. I think that's the other thing we have to think about. When you look at China and think about what's happened over the last 4 or 5 years, and let's set ASF aside for a second, the COVID thing is probably the most recent development there in a sense. And we'll never know. And I want to say that in the sense, we'll never know exactly what happened. But the coronavirus, in my view, kind of put a shiver through the population's backbone and said, oh my gosh, and they're not in control. And we thought they were in control. And there's always been this gentle person's agreement between the CCP and the people, like, we can stay in power if you keep us fed. And the fact that the way the coronavirus is managed, I think that shook that trust in that view. And so the government sees they've got to do that. But then you go back and look over the last 5 to 10 years and think about corn in particular, how they ramped up this huge stocks and they stockpiled this corn, and then all of a sudden they had too much corn and prices were falling and their prices were going up because the demand was there, but the quality wasn't there. And so they couldn't use it. And so they were importing other feed grains. And then you had the government said, okay, we've got to get rid of the stocks because the prices are falling. We've got to do something about that. Or, we got to get prices down. So they got rid of stocks. The prices didn't come down enough. And now you get my point, is it's just this ongoing mess of policy that's just created all sorts of things. And now the government's coming back and thinking about new policies to try to move corn production higher. How do we improve corn production, get prices down, because it's really, really been a problem.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And, when we hear the 5-year plans coming out of China, you wonder if they just think they can just snap their fingers and make some of these supply side things that they're hoping for, make them happen. And that, I think, is part of the reason that we can remain optimistic for the year, at least the next couple of years, because they've got some lofty production needs to feed into that system there, Steve, that if they don't get there, it's going to turn into demand for corn from the global marketplace.
No, that's exactly right, Chip. I mean, we've seen these 5-year plans. It's in, for all of our lifetime with very lofty goals. And I won't say they're never met, but they've always said we're going to be self-sufficient in feed grains. Well, they've never been self-sufficient in feed grains. And, that's the piece that makes you optimistic. Now, I think the other thing that's happening here we have to recognize right now is that you have some weather issues around the globe that is making the United States the only place that you can find corn or have available, large available supplies, with La Nina in dry in Argentina, it's dry in the Black Sea, the Russia area. It gives us a little bit of a leg up because we have a lot of corn and we're able to move it and move quantities. So I think we have to remember that. But the fact is, when you look at some of the analysis that my Leif Chang, my colleague in Shanghai, has done, this is like a decade sort of issue for them before they will ever, in the most optimistic view, would ever catch up to us or catch up to their demand for need, you know, their needs. And that's what's just really, as you said in your question, keeps us optimistic about, you know, going forward.
Okay, so all of this has turned into $11 plus dollar equivalent corn prices inside of China, which leads me to the question, if they have the need for corn, is there a price point that shuts off their demand for U.S. corn?
You know, I don't know the exact, what is that, you know, what's that number that, you know, if we get to 552, is that shut it off or whatever? But I remember in the start of this rally, I asked Leif that question. I said, you know, our price is gone. And this is the point where corn had, you know, had leaped over $4 and we were approaching the 450 number. And I said, does this start to shut off demand from China for U.S. corn? And he kind of laughed at me. He said, no, the spread's really wide. The spread between us, our corn price and your corn price is pretty wide. It's going to be a while. So I think there's comfort in the fact that their prices are so high that it's not going to shut off anytime soon. But it also goes back to what I said before. They have a need and they have to fulfill the need, and price becomes almost immaterial.
Okay. So for a producer here in the Midwest that is thinking about all of this, how do they work this into their marketing plan, Steve?
Yeah. This is a real, you know, this is the real dilemma. And I'm going to start with the sort of the, I'm going to bring, I guess I would say, you know, the optimist side of this would be to bring some reality to the market. Mm-hmm. So first of all, whether you look at beans or corn, and it's a little bit of different discussion for both markets, but after, you know, this week's reports, it gets a lot closer.
Right.
You have an inverse market. You have a market that's parabolic. And so, and as I said, it's this rocket fuel is going to run out. And so I get very nervous when I see markets running like this so fast, so hard, that, you know, that reversal could be pretty, what should we say, catastrophic.
Right. You know what, Steve? Hey, we're coming up on a hard break. On a hard break here, Steve. So I want to take it. And I think that's a good spot for us to stop for now, because when we come back, I want to continue this talk. What happens if the rocket fuel does run out? We're talking with Steve Nicholson from Rabo AgriFinance right here on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news, and we're headed over to the charts for today's headlines. You've heard markets referred to as oversold or overbought. That's not just a feeling the analyst has. Most of the time, they're looking at something called the Relative Strength Index. It's a calculated measurement of momentum. And traditionally, an RSI below 30 indicates the market is oversold and potentially ready for a reset, which would normally be a round of higher prices driven by short covering. An RSI of 70 or higher indicates the market is overbought, and a reset would normally be a round of lower prices driven by long liquidation. Late last week, March corn had an RSI of 85.4. March beans sported an RSI of 83.5. That puts both markets well into overbought territory. But hey, there's some room over in March SRW wheat, where the RSI measured just 64.7. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Markets are closed, and normally we'd be going to this guy, Davis Michelson, get a recap of how the market's closed, but
that's right.
Nothing to really talk about there, dude.
Well, and so far the conversation with Steve is going so well. You know, most people would eat popcorn while they're, you know, sort of taking in something like this.
Uh-huh.
I've gone the extra mile because it's so dang good to hear Steve. I'm eating a portobello mushroom with fried Southwest vegetables over the top of it right now. It's absolutely true.
That's
really healthy.
That's very healthy and a lot of information there. Let me guess, organic tea to go with it?
Actually, I'm just drinking some crystal cool Iowa groundwater right now.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. I love it. Love it. All right.
Hold you up. You guys are doing great. It's awesome.
Well, thank you, Davis. Thank you. We are talking with Steve Nicholson, Rabo AgriFinance, grain and oilseed analyst there. And at the end of the last segment, we were talking about this rocket fuel that has been dumped on the markets and near parabolic moves. These are all things that I hear people say, Steve, when we're very close to a high. What are you watching for?
Yeah, and that's a great question to think about it that way, is that you know the markets are acting, you know, are we near a high? Mm-hmm. And it would seem that we could be close to that. And I looked at this a couple different ways. Let's talk about the calendar when we get there. Mm-hmm. One of the things I did, and this question came up in equity markets about, you know, are we in an equity market bubble? And I think it was an interesting question. And the guy that was talking about this said he looks at 200-day moving averages versus the current market. So he was looking at stocks, or he was looking at, you know, Dow Jones Industrials or the S&P 500 or NASDAQ or something index. And he said he didn't think there was. And I thought, well, what if it has application to commodity markets? So I looked at that in nearby corn market over the last 10 years. If you look at that, typically when the moving average is 10% above the current market, the market tends to correct. And you're like, that was pretty interesting. And that was pretty consistent. Occasionally we get to 12 or 13% and it would correct, but that's okay. When I did it here recently, now I haven't done it with this last move up, but it was at 27% over the current market. Yeah, and that was exactly my reaction. It's like, So that gets me really, you know, that gets me concerned that we are near a top. So So that's the piece that, and as I said, we see this rocket fuel and this parabolic move up, that gets me wondering. So now I have to think about fundamentals and think about the calendar and think about where I am on my, you know, how much have I sold? You know, I think most of us have heard that a lot of folks have got 20 crops sold or a good portion of it. And that was the right thing to do. I know people have some sellers regret, but when you look at the market, looked at their margins and what they could do, that was, they made a good rational economic decision. So now the question is, what do I do going forward? And I think that's where, you know, it gets more difficult, but it also gets, it goes back to the same rationale. If we look at December corn 21 or December 22 corn, you're still above $4. And for a lot of folks, you look at that, now granted, that's the futures price, so I get that. That still gets you in a range where you probably can lock in some profitable margins. Beans, a little more challenging. You know, new crop beans are closer to $12. 22 beans, still $10.50. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets a little dicier. But the fact is, can you lock in some profitable margins there? And the answer to that is probably yes.
Right.
And so I think you have to, and it's not like we're going to sell the whole farm, but let's start establishing a foundation. And if that's the worst sale of the year and it goes higher, so be it. But if it goes down, you're going to be really happy you sold that. And so that's where my mentality is. It makes, I said this to someone here earlier today. I said, you know, if you get some of that risk off the table, your banker sleeps better, your spouse sleeps better, and you probably sleep better.
Yep.
That's not a bad combination of things to have happen.
That's a great point right there. Yep.
Yeah. So that's the first thing. Now, when we think about the calendar, and, you know, the next big number we're going to see is perfected plantings. And we all expect that we're going to see record plantings when we see prices like this right now. And the supply and demand, or the fundamentals, or the balance sheet, whatever you want to call it, would dictate that we need that, and particularly with beans. And this is where it kind of gets separated a little bit. We're going to get good corn numbers. It's likely going to raise. We just have started looking at this in our 10-year baseline, and we just looked at the plenary run this morning, and that's likely going to add stocks to the balance sheet for corn. So that's going to probably be a little more less friendly to an upside market on corn. When you look at the bean number, it's a little different situation. You could get big acres of beans, and I think you will, but it's going to be a little tougher to kind of get those stock numbers up. So I do think that the bean market will be well supported. And it's like we had said in the first section, because of the export demand globally, and we'll focus on China, obviously, that is going to help be supporting these markets over the next couple of 2 years. But I think you're going to have some roller coasters that are going to give you a lot of indigestion along the way. And again, you're going to be happy to have some coverage in place, because that roller coaster is going to look at it and go, oh boy, I'm glad I did that. Or, oh, what am I going to do now? And then you get paralyzed, and we don't want to do that. So make a decision while you are in a good spot.
That's great advice. Yep. When it's, I shouldn't say easy to.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
It's not always easy, but doggone it, it's okay to get started. You don't have to get crazy with those out year sales.
Yeah.
But we're into that kind of a move right now where, you know what? I know that there are farmers listening to this, Steve, and some of them are going to be rolling their eyes saying, well, here it comes. Here comes the multi-year crop sale advice.
Yeah.
You've at least got to look at it.
Yeah, and I had this discussion with someone else, and this was with a farmer, and they didn't roll their eyes at me, but you know, I could tell there was a little concern, but they also knew what we were talking about made sense to them.
Yeah.
And I reminded them, I said, keep in mind, you've got crop insurance as a backstop here. So use your crop insurance as that backstop, and don't be afraid to make that decision out in 21 or 22, because you've got crop insurance.
Yeah. And yeah, on the crop insurance side of things here, Steve, I've had people say to me, February can't get here fast enough with where corn and soybean prices are right now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly right. And we have to look forward to that. I said, you're going to have potentially a huge number in February for that crop insurance that it has to meet. And that may be difficult to meet, which will be good for you as a crop insurance holder.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and I think that's the thing I always come back to. I said, we have to remember, we have lots of good things in this market to be thankful for right now. And if we had this discussion a shy 4 or 5 months ago, and we said, you're going to see a 5 in front of corn prices and a 14 to 13 in front of bean prices, you guys said, man, I'm going to sell the farm for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So let's remember again, let's remember where we've been and keep that. And it's, you know, here's the opportunity to build that working capital. Maybe there's some capital expenditures you can make to improve that farming efficiency. You know, here's your opportunity to do some of that.
Yeah. So, I know that you focus primarily on the grains and oilseeds, Steve, but I know that you also pay attention to the input sides. If you're going to be doing some of this, get more aggressive on 21 crop pricing, even take a look out at the 22 crop pricing, you would probably better be looking at booking some of your inputs for that as well.
Yeah, absolutely good advice, Chip. Let's think about that, and that's one of the things. Because you know as well as I do, and you know, when you look at farm inputs, and I hate, you know, we always pick on the seed guys, and I don't mean to do that, but you know what happened to farm inputs costs as prices rise, they go with them. So why not try to get ahead of that, and also try to get, then you can lock in and you can really know what that margin is you want to get. You know, what margin can you expect? And look at that and get that locked in and go home and farm for another year. You know, there is going to be some, you know, some inflation in farm input costs. We expect that. That's just normal with these sort of commodity prices. I think the other concern is when we look at the supply side, when we look particularly at P&K, nitrogen not so much, but I think it's also a concern thinking about what's happened to energy prices when we look into the future. You know, you had so much disruption in the supply chain earlier last year, because of COVID, bringing stuff out of China, bringing stuff out of that Pacific Rim area, do we have a situation as we get deeper into 21 and then to 22 that prices have to go up to incentivize supply? And I think that's the thing we're all thinking and worrying about right now. So, yes, it makes perfect sense to look ahead to farm inputs and say, boy, I wonder if I could buy 2 years of seed or I could lay in 2 years of fertilizer and do it now and be done with it.
Good stuff. Good stuff, man.
I would second that. I second the motion, Steve.
Good good deal, Davis. All right, man. Hey, we're out of time. This has been a great conversation with you, Steve. Really appreciate it. Good luck to you in the year ahead. And I'm telling you, if you and I know you do this on a regular basis, but when you see some of these big-time changes that might happen in these markets in the next 6 months, when you see them starting to happen, give me a holler. Let's get you back on.
We will do so. It's been a great to talk to you all. Happy New Year to all. Yeah, let's have a great 21. It's been a great conversation. Glad we had
it. Great. Good stuff. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. That is Steve Nicholson, grain and oilseed analyst there with Rabo Agri Finance. Okay, you know what time it is. It's Monday. Yeah, the markets are closed, but we're still going to get a chart update. Kerry Artek, Artek Advisory, up next right here on AgriTalk.
You can't see us, and we can't see you, so don't go changing. Listen just the way you are to AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It's a Martin Luther King Jr. Day edition of AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us. Great conversation there with Steve Nicholson. I mean, how many times... And I know that it can feel repetitive talking about China, China, China. But when you look at the influence that that market had over the last 12 months, I mean, like 12 months to the day, the signing of the phase one of the trade agreement with China, when you look at the influence that that one market, that one destination for exports had in 2020 and the potential that it has to impact our trade again and our revenues and the money that's in your pockets, the potential to influence that again in 2021, it's just unbelievable. It is so unbelievable that we rely on that market as much as we do. Now, with all that said, we can't lose track that some of these European markets have come back to U.S. beans. That was an important point that Steve brought up. And it's not just China. We've got demand also coming from those other areas. Okay, guys, you know, it's Monday. Kerry Artek would not leave us high and dry without taking a look at the charts and what to expect in the week ahead. Don't forget, you can go to Artek Advisory, A-R-T-A-C, advisory.com to get more from Kerry. Let's go ahead and get what Kerry's got for us on the markets.
All right, thanks, Chip. Yeah, we'll start. You know, I'm going to be doing three markets: March corn, March soybean meal, and March soybeans. I'll start with March corn. This is really an update. You know, several weeks ago in your show, I mentioned a long-term buy signal above 465 half. That's a pretty static number because it's based on a horizontal channel top that went back about 4 years. We closed above that a few weeks ago. And so my price targets are really the same. I'm still expecting, you know, 579 even. That's a 2 to 3 month target, and really a wide range between 6.25 to 6.5, 625 to 6.5. It's narrowing gradually. I don't want to get into the weeds too much on what they are. One of them is a long-term speed line, but 625, 650 even roughly is our ultimate target. I've been saying 5 to 8 months, but you know, we're about 40% of the way there already in 3 weeks. And so we're getting this price acceleration. This shouldn't be a big surprise because, you know, this happens with significant buy signals, and we're in a vertical market right now. So we might reach 579 even rather than 2 to 3 months within another 2 to 3 weeks. And that 625, even the 650 area, I wouldn't be surprised to see that perhaps by the end of March. And that is a significant zone of resistance that can contain buying really for the rest of the year. Now, downside, I don't really have a sell signal per se. unless we close back below 465 half, and we're quite a distance above that right now. But if we did, then I'd see a good high into spring, probably summer, because over that time frame, within a month or two of closing back below 465 half, I would expect the 365 area roughly. But we're not there. I'm just giving you that downside, worst case scenario. Holding above 465 half, all systems go to the upside. Ultimately, still expecting the 625, even the 650 even area over the coming months. On to March soybeans. Last week in your show, I mentioned that had we closed the week above 1372 roughly by about a 1% margin, that was 1386 even. That did happen. And so we are in the midst of a longer-term buy signal with regard to, you know, March soybeans. I am anticipating 1536 and a quarter. That's kind of a 3 to 5 week target, and 1660 as a 3 to 5 month target. But once again, this is becoming an increasingly accelerated vertical market. So those price targets, 1536 and a quarter, rather than 3 to 5 weeks, that could be 2 or 3 weeks perhaps. And then 1660, rather than 3 to 5 months, that again could be perhaps by the end of March. These are difficult. The timing is tough, but in any event, that ultimate objective at 1660 now is one that can certainly contain buying for the year itself. Now, downside, if we close the week Friday back below 1372 even, which would be quite a sell-off from current price levels, that would indicate a good winter high. I would then expect 1136 even within a couple of months, let's say by the end of March, where we could bottom out through spring. And finally, soybean meal is worth mentioning because, you know, being the soybean derivative that it is, it's also posting just barely, really, but posting a secondary buy signal by closing this week above 457 even. So if you're looking at March soybean meal, 457 even is a floor of support. Now we are just above and above which we should push on and retest that 541.8 2012 high over the next several months. And whether we could expect a double top there or not long term is a tough call. I'll be watching this one closely, but it is nonetheless a target. If, on the other hand, we close the week Friday back below 457 even March soybean meal, then I think 395 even is likely over the next month or two, where we could bottom out through spring. But right now, soybean meal posting a nice buy signal, secondarily rather, into the 541.8 2012 high region should be realized over the next few months, possibly 3 to 5 weeks, depending on volatility. And that's all I've got for this this week's show, Chip.
All right, Kerry, thank you so much. Appreciate that. We'll be watching those numbers this week. Once again, everybody, Kerry Artak. That is artakadvisory.com, A-R-T-A-C advisory.com. All right. Well, you know, last week was the frustration was building. Let's just put it that way. Frustration was building after the January 12 quarterly grain stocks report, annual production summary, winter wheat seedings, and the supply and demand report. And a lot of it stemmed from some big supply side changes that we saw in the quarterly grain stocks report, including a revision to the September 1 stocks. How did that happen? Why did that happen? The biggest bushel change from November to January for a corn yield, another big cut to the cotton yield estimate. How did it happen? Why did it happen? Lance Honing is going to be with us tomorrow morning. And I'm telling you guys, I am really looking forward to the conversation with Lance. We're going to get an explanation of how these changes happened, why they happened. Did they identify any correct? What led to the revisions of those grain stocks numbers? Those are going to be some interesting conversations to have with Lance. We'll get to the bottom of it and get a better understanding of what is going on there. Guys, hope you enjoyed your day off. Really looking forward to getting back together with you again tomorrow morning right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.